Well, welcome back to the GI Hepatology Podcast. Today's topic is gastric secretion. I'm going to give a quick overview of gastric juice and the contents, and then we'll go into more specifics about each of these. So the stomach produces gastric juice, and we typically think about acid, which we'll talk a lot about, intrinsic factor, which is the only indispensable product in gastric juice that you can't live without. And without a stomach, even though it's nice to have a stomach for digestion and absorption, you can actually adapt and digest and absorb a significant amount of nutrients in the absence of the stomach. But without intrinsic factor, you have to replace vitamin B12. Pepsin, which is, of course, the cleaved active form of pepsinogen. Mucus, which serves as a lubricant, and with bicarbonate, helps protect the stomach lining from acid and pepsin, and water. So we'll talk first about acid and the stimulants and inhibitors of gastric acid secretion, and we'll go into a little bit of depth of some three classically defined phases of gastric acid secretion. Then we'll talk a bit about the other products of gastric acid. And I'm going to save until the very end a section that may not be of interest to everyone on some of the functional anatomy of the stomach and the different types of glands in the stomach as they pertain to these products that we'll be talking about first, and a bit about the physiology of acid secretion for those who are interested in that. But I wanted to save that to the end in case that's of less interest to a group of the listeners. All right, so we will get started with acid secretion. So let's start with acid secretion. When you hear acid secretion, you should think about the kind of functional cell that is responsible for that, which is the parietal cell. Parietal cells are predominantly located in the body and fundus of the stomach in what are called oxyntic glands. The oxyntic portion of the stomach, which is the body and the fundus. Parietal cells are very promiscuous, so they have multiple receptors that can activate acid secretion, and the receptors are for histamine, the H2 receptor, for acetylcholine, the muscarinic type 3 receptor, and for gastrin, the gastrin CCK2 receptors. Now, of these three primary things that stimulate parietal cell activity, two of them directly target the parietal cell. So gastrin and acetylcholine both directly work on the parietal cell to increase acid secretion. Gastrin also makes a stop at the enterochromaffin-like cells, stimulates those cells to produce histamine, and histamine then also acts on the parietal cell. The histamine, I wanted to just mention a few other brief points about. So it works in a paracrine-like fashion. So these enterochromaffin-like cells are often located in the glands near the parietal cells. These cells have gastrin CCK2 receptors, and when gastrin stimulates these cells, they produce histamine. In addition, gastrin also causes a trophic effect or a growth effect for the enterochromaffin-like cells, which is why you can see hyperplasia of these cells when you have a hypergastrinemic state. The interesting thing about histamine is that while it does stimulate gastric acid secretion, it is thought to potentiate the effects of gastrin and acetylcholine on the parietal cell, so that a small amount of either of those can produce near maximal acid production. Without histamine, therefore, gastrin and acetylcholine have a relatively weak stimulatory effect on acid secretion. And so along those lines, the basal acid output is about 10 to 15% of the maximum capacity. So the unstimulated capacity of the stomach, or sorry, the unstimulated stomach secretes acid at about 10 to 15% of the maximum capacity. There's a diurnal rhythm to basal acid output, and that is greater in the evening and lower in the morning just before waking. Although it's not entirely clear why this occurs, as gastrin is fairly steady throughout the day. There are three phases that we're going to get into, and we'll probably put this in the next segment for those of you who already want a little pause. And those are the cephalic phase, the gastric phase, and the intestinal phases of acid secretion. So the first of the three phases of gastric secretion, the cephalic phase, is the phase that occurs before food is in the stomach. And this accounts for approximately one-third of gastric secretion. It's stimulated by the special senses. So these are primarily chemoreceptors for sight, smell, taste, and then thought, which it is interesting that a self-selected meal is a best stimulation for gastric secretion. Having a patient think about a meal they are really excited about, as opposed to perhaps hospital food, is likely to stimulate more gastric juices. And then chewing, swallowing, pressure against the tongue and the buccal mucosa triggers some mechanoreceptors, which also stimulate acid secretion. Most of these act by sending vagal afferents back to the cerebral cortex, which then sends impulses which converge on the hypothalamus, sends impulses to the dorsal motor nucleus of the vagus nerve and the medulla, and then out through vagal or cranial nerve 10 efferents to cause actions. In the body, the vagal efferents are going to act in a couple of places. They're going to act on the parietal cells directly in the body to secrete acid. They're going to, and this is using acetylcholine as a neurotransmitter. Acetylcholine also activates chief cells, which produce pepsinogen. And it's convenient, very synergistic, that pepsinogen in a low pH or an acidic environment is cleaved into the active form of pepsin. In the body, the acetylcholine from vagal efferents also stimulates histamine from production from enterochromaffin-like cells, which then, of course, goes on to stimulate and potentiate the effects of acetylcholine and on parietal cells. The vagal efferents also stimulate release of gastrin from the G cells in the antrum. However, instead of acetylcholine, it's thought that GRP, or gastrin-releasing peptide, or bombesin, are the neurotransmitters transmitters released from the vagal efferents in the antrum to stimulate the G cells to make gastrin, which then goes on to stimulate the parietal cells directly and enterochromaffin-like cells, which make histamine that then potentiates the effects of acetylcholine and gastrin on the parietal cells. Inhibitors of the cephalic phase are primarily anything that stimulates the sympathetic nervous system. So again, a lot of this is vagally, most of the cephalic phase is vagally mediated. And so anything that stimulates the opposing sort of branch of the autonomic nervous system, the sympathetic nervous system, could be physical or emotional stress, will inhibit the cephalic phase. Cranial nerve 10, or the vagus nerve, also inhibits the D cells that produce somatostatin and thus reduces a blockade of gastrin release. And a quick note that in patients who undergo vagotomy, this rids of their response to sham feeding. So you can no longer have them think about or smell food and produce acid. So the gastric phase of gastric acid secretion contributes about 2/3 of gastric juices, and this is the phase that occurs once food occupies the stomach. The two main stimuli for the gastric phase of gastric acid secretion are distension or stretch and chemical activation, and predominantly amino acid small peptides. So to begin with stretch, stretch sends vagal nerve afferents back to the central nervous system, and then vagal nerve efferents back to the parietal cells to stimulate using acetylcholine acid secretion. And when it occurs in this manner in which there's a vagovagal reflex where both afferent and efferent impulses are mediated by the vagal nerve, and there is a sort of a central control center, central nervous system involvement, then these are called long reflexes. So this would be, for example, when food initially enters the stomach and there's stretch that then triggers acetylcholine to stimulate the G cells to make gastrin and the parietal cells to make acid and the enterochromaffin-like cells to make histamine. There are also short reflexes, and these are ones that are predominantly driven by the enteric nervous system and occur within the wall of the stomach, with single enteric nervous system neuron or intermediary neurons involved, using acetylcholine as the neurotransmitter. And there are two classic local short reflexes that are mentioned in a few of the resources used for this podcast. One is the pyloric reflex. And I think these are just indicative of some of the, again, synergy that goes into gastric acid secretion. So the pyloric reflex is basically that distension of normally vagally innervated antrum stimulates gastrin, meaning the stretch of the antrum stimulates acetylcholine production, which stimulates the G cells to produce gastrin and thus stimulates parietal cells to make acid. This reflex is decreased but not completely abolished with vagotomy, which means that gastrin release is mediated by vagal and these local short reflexes. The other one is a pylorooxyntic reflex, and this is when you distend the antrum in the setting of a pH of 1. This stimulates acid secretion from the body of the stomach, from the parietal cells. And this the experiments that were done did this because gastrin is not produced by the G cells when the pH is under 2. So this means that the acid that was secreted from the parietal cells was in the absence of gastrin and was almost entirely neurally mediated. And so again, this is another example of a short reflex where all of this is happening within the wall of the stomach. So that's stretch, short and long reflexes. Chemical activation, again, we've talked about acetylcholine above, which is kind of a neurotransmitter chemical that stimulates parietal and G cells, stimulates mucus production. The main driver or main stimulus that is a chemical activator of gastric phase of gastric secretion are amino acids and small peptides. These directly stimulate the G cells in the antrum to make gastrin. This stimulates the parietal cells through the gastrin CCK2 receptors and increases the activity of the hydrogen potassium ATPase, or the acid pumps, to make acid, and also stimulates the chief cells to make pepsinogen, which in the acidic environment, as we mentioned below or above, is cleaved into its active form of pepsin. Gastrin release is inhibited when the pH is under 2 to 3, and so there's no gastrin typically in an empty stomach. When food comes into the stomach, the pH, especially from proteins, can neutralize acid and increase the pH as high as 6. And so this is a ripe setting for this change in pH to, in the setting of stretch and in the setting of amino acids and small peptides, to stimulate gastrin secretion. However, as noted, the rise in pH when food enters and buffers the acid in the stomach is basically permissive for vagal nerve stimulation from the cephalic phase to start, and then from the gastric phase to maintain gastrin release. So again, these are all very well synchronized. Now, we've talked about the cephalic phase and acetylcholine stimulating G cells, but one of the strongest stimuli for the G cells to produce gastrin are amino acids and peptides. And the aromatic amino acids are the most potent stimuli. And these are not, this response to amino acids is not blocked or abolished by vagotomy. But again, as mentioned a few times above, when the pH is under 2 to 3, this does stop gastrin release in response to both acetylcholine, in response to amino acids. And then inhibition of the gastric phase of gastric secretion is again the sympathetic nervous system, and then somatostatin. So a low pH stimulates D cells to produce somatostatin. Remember, low pH inhibits G cells from producing gastrin. Somatostatin shuts down the G cells, so it's directly inhibiting these, and therefore indirectly decreases acid secretion, but also works directly on the parietal cells and the chief cells to reduce their activity and inhibit them. So the intestinal phase of gastric secretion contributes a minimal amount to the actual production of gastric juice. However, we're going to spend more time talking about inhibitors of gastric secretion after we cover the two stimulants. Now, the two stimulants for the intestinal phase are intestinal gastrin, which is G34, so 34 amino acid peptide, which is different from the predominant form of gastrin produced by the G cells in the antrum of the stomach, which is G17, which is covered in the first lecture on gastrointestinal peptides. Gastrin from the intestines, however, is also going to be stimulated in response to protein breakdown products in the duodenum, and it is going to work as a hormone, goes through the bloodstream, and again, stimulates the parietal cell to directly stimulate acid secretion. And the second one is a relatively poorly understood compound produced in the small bowel called oxyroauxintin, and it is thought to be a direct stimulus for parietal cells. Inhibitors. So I'm going to cover some things we've talked about in the initial podcast on gastrointestinal peptides, and I'll review kind of the main functions of these peptides, focusing first on their role when it comes to gastric secretion. The first is secretin, produced by the S cells in the small intestine, predominantly the duodenum. This is stimulated in response to increased acidity, so low pH, and fatty acids. It is going to inhibit gastrin production by inhibiting the G cells, and therefore inhibits acid secretion. It's also going to stimulate the liver to make bile and stimulate the duct cells of the pancreas to make bicarbonate. And I was asked on a board review question about which cells secretin works on, and it is the duct cells, just so that may show up. CCK, produced by the I cells, is the second inhibitory peptide. It is stimulated in response to fatty acids, so there's some overlap there with secretin and peptides. It inhibits parietal cells directly. Its other functions are to enhance the action of secretin for bile production, cause gallbladder contraction and sphincter of Oddi relaxation, and stimulates the pancreatic ACE in our cells to secrete zymogens. There are other enteroendocrine cells that produce PYY and neurotensin that are both thought to be inhibitory to gastric secretion. And so I thought I would finish with a short section just on the inhibition of acid secretion, that we'll review some of the things that we just talked about, and kind of from the beginning of food intake through what we just discussed with intestinal phase. So food enters the stomach, that is, remember, going to buffer the baseline resting acidic environment or low pH, that is present in the interdigestive period. When the pH gets above 3, then the cephalic and gastric phase triggers that we talked about previously can stimulate the G cells to produce gastrin, which is then going to increase acid secretion in multiple ways discussed previously. 1 hour after the meal, gastric secretion is at its maximal capacity, or near its maximal capacity. The buffering capacity of food has been saturated, and some is actually already emptied from the stomach, and the acid concentration of the stomach contents again begins to increase. As the pH falls, gastrin is going to be inhibited from being released from the G cells, and this removes a very large stimulus for acid secretion, allowing the pH to again rise. This is kind of a passive negative feedback loop. Somatostatin is also released as the pH drops, and this is going to directly inhibit parietal cells, directly inhibit histamine release from the enterochromaffin-like cells, and directly inhibit gastrin release from the G cells. The duodenum has several enterogastrones that are released by acid, fatty acids, or hyperosmolar solutions that inhibit gastric emptying and gastric secretion. And so these are meant to basically be brakes on the process of gastric emptying, to prevent acid injury to the duodenum and to keep the duodenum from being overwhelmed with more food than it can digest or absorb. Gastric inhibitory peptide, or GIP, is an inhibitor. It is stimulated by fatty acids, and it acts on the parietal cells to decrease secretion of acid. Secretin, we talked about, has a few different ways in which it is going to decrease, one main way in which it's going to decrease acid secretion, and that's by inhibiting the G cells, reducing gastrin production, and therefore a few different things that gastrin stimulates to ramp up acid secretion are going to be inhibited. CCK is going to decrease gastric emptying, and is also going to directly inhibit the parietal cells. that wraps up this section. We'll end with a brief discussion of some of the other products of gastric excretion and just a bit about the trophic effects of some of the hormones, and then that will be it. So we talked a lot about acid, things that increase it, things that decrease it, different phases, which are a little bit artificially created, though not entirely. And so I want to talk about a few other products of gastric secretion. First is pepsin. So pepsin starts protein digestion by splitting some of the interior peptide links. Pepsinogen is a product of the chief cells, and it is released from the chief cells and is split to its active form pepsin when the pH is below 5, typically a range 1.8 to 3.5 from one of the sources. Pepsin can actually self-catalyze further formation of pepsin from pepsinogen. There are two different forms of pepsinogen. Pepsinogen 1 is secreted by the peptic, the chief cells, and the mucus cells of the auxiliary glands, and pepsinogen 2 is produced by the mucus cells of the pyloric gland area and the duodenum, and less so by the auxiliary gland area. The strongest stimulus for pepsinogen release is acetylcholine. And so again, the cephalic phase and stretch are going to be a big cephalic phase, and then the stretch in the gastric phase are going to be two big stimuli for pepsin release. Acid also, as we kind of hinted at before, has some major roles in pepsin physiology. So first, you need acid to convert pepsinogen to the active enzyme pepsin. At around a pH of 2, remember we gave the range before of 1.8 to 3.5, but at around a pH of 2, this conversion is almost instantaneous. Acid also triggers local short reflexes using acetylcholine to stimulate chief cells to secrete more pepsinogen, and the parietal cells to secrete more acid. There are acid-sensitive reflexes that increase the effects of other stimuli in the peptic cell. They make sure that you don't secrete pepsinogen, basically, unless there's adequate acid. And then fourth, acid releases secretin in the duodenum that stimulates pepsinogen secretion. Without pepsin, acid doesn't really cause ulcers. So some of the benefit of blocking acid may be in part from lowering pepsinogen release and pepsin production. So after pepsin, mucus is another substance in gastric secretions. Vagal nerve stimulation using acetylcholine as a neurotransmitter stimulates an increase in soluble mucus from the mucus neck cells of the pits and glands in the stomach. It lubricates chyme. The surface mucus cells make visible or insoluble mucus from chemical stimulation as well in physical contact and friction with food. And this forms a gel that entraps the alkaline part of surface cell secretion, so some bicarbonate. And it's there in the interdigestive phase to protect the stomach from what is a very acidic environment otherwise. And on contact with acid, this mucus precipitates and then moves into the duodenum. Another compound produced by gastric secretion is intrinsic factor. This is a mucoprotein from the parietal cells. So acid and intrinsic factor are both produced by the parietal cells, which is important in cases of pernicious anemia, where they're often achlorhydric, as well as B12 deficient because of the role intrinsic factor plays in B12 absorption. Intrinsic factor joins with B12 to make a complex that it's absorbed, helps B12 to be absorbed in the terminal ileum. Inability to make intrinsic factor is associated with achlorhydria in the absence of parietal cells. Again, this is pernicious anemia and B12 deficiency due to that. It takes a long time to recognize this often, especially the B12 deficiency component, just because of the significant stores of B12 in the liver. And lastly, just wanted to mention briefly the growth trophic effect on mucosa. So many hormones have both effects of stimulating secretion of something, and this is not just in the gastrointestinal tract, and also have a trophic effect on the glands in which they are working. And so in the stomach, gastrin is going to have an effect on the cells that it is stimulating. In hypergastrinemic states, you sometimes see this enterochromaffin-like cell hyperplasia. That is just from kind of an overstimulation and trophic effect. And that can actually predispose to carcinoid tumors of certain types that are related to hypergastrinemia. And you can also get parietal cell hyperplasia in a hypergastrinemic state. So the two target cells of gastrin can be hyperplastic. And then we talked a little bit about some of the enterogastrons in the small bowel serving as inhibitors based on the contents of the chyme entering the duodenum in the small bowel can serve as inhibitors for gastric secretion. And so one of the complications that tends to be in the early months, especially first year or so after significant small bowel resections in patients with short bowel syndrome, is hypergastrinemia. And so this is often treated with H2 blockade or PPI blockade, but just to note that that's really from this removal of this inhibitory compound or mechanism for gastric secretion.